Those of us who use computers are becoming increasingly aware of the giant organisations which dominate the internet. It's been suggested that their mottos could be, "I know about everything," that's for Wikipedia, "I can sell you anything," that's for Amazon, "I know everybody," Facebook, "I know everything about you," that's Google. For myself, I've been both delighted and a little bit spooked too when Google started sending me messages telling me where I'd been in the last month, or at least where my mobile phone had been when it was switched on. The kind of knowledge and compass which 20 years ago was still very firmly in the realm of science fiction is now an everyday reality. Largely, I'd say, for good, albeit with several big riders and concerns as well, which I hope our lawmakers in time manage to get on top of. But all of which means that when Psalm 139 speaks of God's in-depth knowledge of every single human being, I suspect there isn't quite the incredulity that many of us might have felt when we read those words a few years ago. After all, if the machines that human beings have made have these days scarcely any limit to their memory and their reach, it's entirely believable that the God who made us has even more in-depth knowledge. Although I suspect for most of us, as with the psalm writer, and as with our reactions to what our computers know about us, this picture of our all-seeing, all-knowing God may evoke both positive and negative reactions. It begins, "O Lord, you have searched me and know me. You know me when I sit down and when I rise up." And of course, if the silicon chips in our pocket, or even more on our wrist, can track our hours of waking and sleep with ease, we won't be surprised that God can as well. The tone, though, as the psalm begins, is largely a positive one, which is maintained even when the psalm writer tells us that God goes far further than computer technology currently can in knowing what's going on in our very minds. Verse 2 continues, "You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down." For though, as we'll see, there's a side to this which the writer isn't entirely comfortable with, his first and last thoughts about it are very much positive ones. Verse 3 speaks positively, "You are acquainted with all my ways." And verse 6, even more happily, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's high and I cannot attain it." But it becomes clear that the God who knows everything about us isn't just an information gathering machine, let alone one which has been built to record our data, ultimately to profit its creators. No, he is a personal God who knows us because he delights to do so and because he longs to encourage and to prosper and to bless us. We'll come in a moment to two specific sections where the assurance this brings the psalmist is particularly focused. In the way the Lord's complete knowledge of us can bring light even in the deepest darkness, and in the assurance that comes from knowing that he is the one who's known us from even before we were born. Before we get to that, though, the psalmist expresses his significant misgivings about this all-seeing, all-knowing God who he believes in. Verse 6, "Where shall I go from your spirit, or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to the heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, the world of the dead, you are there." The conviction that God is everywhere and knows everything about us, has its downside, you see. It means there's no way that any of us can escape his gaze. The book of Jonah illustrates that truth very dramatically. The one chosen to be a prophet is told by God to go east to Nineveh. But instead, he heads on a boat going in the very opposite direction, well beyond the territory where the God of Israel was worshipped. But Jonah quickly discovers that you can't escape God's clutches as easily as that. First, there's a violent storm. Then the pagan sailor's method of drawing lots to find the culprit puts the finger very firmly on Jonah. He's promptly dispatched overboard, then miraculously rescued by a passing fish, who conveniently vomits him up onto dry land, presumably battered and bruised, but still alive, and where he can hear God's call again to travel to Nineveh. And after that rather sanitary experience, this time round, he decides that even if he still doesn't really fancy the mission being given to him, he's much better off doing as he was told. For his people's God is the Lord of the whole world. The 19th century poet Francis Thompson, in much his most famous piece, writes of a similar discovery. He begins, "I fled him down the nights and down the days. I fled him down the arches of the years. I fled him down the labyrinthine ways of my own mind. And in the midst of tears, I hid from him." But the reader of the poem already knows that Thompson's attempt to flee from God cannot succeed because of the title he's given it, The Hound of Heaven. And maybe there's someone here making a similar discovery. You've heard God's call perhaps over many years, but you've never really said yes to it. You've tried to hide or to flee, but he's pursued you. I suggest maybe that means it's time to abandon the flight and instead to discover with the psalmist that though a part of you may feel a bit intimidated by God's power and his omnipresence, ultimately there can be a real comfort in yielding to him. For he can make a difference even in the darkest places. Verse 11, if I say, surely the darkness shall cover me and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. The writer is, to begin with, choosing darkness and godlessness as part of his attempt to escape the Lord. But he discovers that God still knows exactly what's going on, and more than that, can offer to help. When the last James Bond film came out, there was a real fear in the movie industry of people making pirate copies with their mobile phones. And a story appeared in the press saying they'd decided to counter that fear by providing night vision goggles for cinema ushers. I rather suspect they didn't buy very many of them, just hoping that the threat might frighten off potential pirates anyway. But where the staff were given them, it wouldn't just enable them to catch any offenders. It would have other benefits. It would mean they could help an audience member in real need far better than without them. And in the metaphorical darkness of our human rebellion, God's all-seeing vision similarly has two sides to it. Yes, it means there isn't the hiding place from him that we might have imagined there to be, but at the same time it means that even in that dark place that we might try and hide in, he is still there to help and to save. And then the final comfort that I'm going to focus on today, the assurance that God knows each one of us through and through, because he has been intimately involved in making each one of us from long before the day we were born. Verse 13, for you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. Those are beautiful words. I think in passing, I might say they lead many Christians to question our society's relatively easy acceptance of abortion. I'm aware it's a complicated issue, and for some a deeply personal one too, as that's a route they've gone down in the past. And of course it needs to be said that, as in every area of life, God's forgiveness is available and a fresh start to all who seek it. Do speak to a Christian if this is something that troubles you personally. But though these words may be important in bringing that challenge to our world's thinking about life before birth, they were written actually in the first place for a rather different purpose, as a comfort and as an assurance. For many, I know, life can seem quite a bleak experience. We hear in both the local and national press of people of all ages unable to cope, some so uncertain of their own worth, tragically taking their own lives. Actually, despite the impression given by the increased reporting, nationally the figures are thankfully still much lower than they were a few years ago. But every such death is a tragedy. And as some will know, this community has suffered two such losses in a very short space of time. There are no easy answers, particularly where major mental health issues are involved. But these verses surely speak a very powerful message to any who are struggling to see the point, or who feel that no one can possibly understand. For they speak, first of all, of a personal creator. We are not just random accumulations of molecules. There's a God who's responsible for everything around us, including you and me, as the summit of his creation. Many, interestingly, are willing to accept a God who in some way initiated the existence of the human race, whether by a process of evolution or by special creation. But the assumption among both parties is often that though he may have set the process up, God isn't really actively involved any longer. The business of embryo construction and development now being entirely determined by the mechanics of DNA and cell biology. That's true. Scientists may well, in time, be able to describe our formation in terms of chemical equations. They're a long way from that, but they are getting there. But this psalm insists that even if that complete scientific description is one day achieved, there's another vitally important way of looking at things as well, of how the Lord is personally involved in each of our beginnings. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. If you're not sure that the two understandings can be held side by side, think of a beautiful cake. Those who were at the Tier Fun quiz last night won't have to use much imagination, because there was one on display yesterday that we had to guess the weight of. And if you get in quickly enough, you'll be able to enjoy a piece of it with your coffee afterwards. But you can describe the making of that cake in a number of ways. There's probably a recipe that was followed that could be printed out and given to anyone who was interested. Then again, as a completely different kind of description as to what was going on when the cake was being made, there's at least one scientist in our midst who can probably tell you some of the key chemical equations that were involved in baking the cake. But that doesn't deny that there's another kind of description as well that may be very important of the individual who made it and why they decided to do so. And in that case, we're very grateful to Camilla Forrester making it as part of our fundraiser to help those in need in the third world. In the same kind of way, Christians believe that the scientific descriptions of how human life comes into being, though they are very true, can and should be accompanied by other kinds of accounts, including this one that we're given here in Psalm 139, of the God who we believe is behind it all. All of which means that every single one of us matters a great deal to this Creator God. Each one of us is deeply understood by him as well. He knows us better than we know ourselves. Other parts of the scriptures tell us more about our relationship with him, how despite our human rebellion and shortcomings, God still loves us. More than that, that he's rescued us through sending his son and has a plan through the coming of his spirit to get our lives back on track and to fight evil in our world. And the latter parts of this psalm, which we don't have time to examine in detail, allude to that side of things as well. But before we get on to that, there's a great comfort for the believer in the foundational truths that the writer majors on in the first half of Psalm 139, of how this great all-seeing God made each one of us, and more than that, of how he knows us through and through.